Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Do I Still Love It, the podcast that won't trade its magic collection for your sleeve of pogs.
I mean, would anyone ever... There's a 10-year-old out there who had that happen to them. Oh. And they had, like, a Black Lotus, and they know for their entire life what they lost.
Yeah, I got into Pogs right as they were no longer cool, so I luckily never traded any of my Magic cards for Pogs.
But you didn't get into Magic because they were no longer cool, because they never stopped being cool.
Never stopped being cool in the James household. You're listening to Do I Still Love It, the nostalgia podcast, where myself, Marshall James...
And I, Laura Weiss...
...will get together with a friend and watch a movie that we loved when we were kids, but we haven't seen in a long time, to see whether or not we still love it now that we're adults. And our friend joining us this week is director and stop-motion animator Eric Witties. Hi, Eric.
Hey, you guys.
Hello.
Eric, thanks for coming on the show. You've shown great interest in being on the show for a while, and now the show is back, and we have got you on to watch 1995's Billy Madison.
This is going to be the first in a trio.
Basically, of movies revisiting, was Adam Sandler funny? Was he as funny as we remember? Were his movies as funny as we remember them?
Or were they just poop jokes?
Well, I have a specific Adam Sandler theory that I was really excited to come in and talk to you guys about.
Lay it on us.
So it's not, was Adam Sandler never funny or was he always funny? It's, well, it is that, but it's also, has he changed or did I get older?
Yes.
When I was like 22, I was a camp counselor for like a weekend thing. And there are these like 13-year-olds, you know, this is over 10 years ago. And there's like a 13-year-old who's talking to his friends and he's got them all circled around him. And he's like, guys, the new Adam Sandler movies, they suck. They're awful. You have to go back to his old school stuff. That's like the really good stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, this kid's like cool. This like 13-year-old, he's seen Billy Madison. He's seen Happy Gilmore. And then he starts talking about the old school stuff, you know, like Mr. Deeds. And I was like, oh, my God, my face just melted. So I'm thinking, is it that do you like Adam Sandler when you're 12? And then just like that gets like cemented into your cinema, you know, library, and you'll always like that, but nothing anything later.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, this is something that I've wondered a lot now. Ever so often I'll catch like myself thinking about something I used to think was funny. And you know, like when you're like a 10, 11, 12-year-old boy, a lot of your humor is literally just repeating lines from movies you think are funny.
I don't think that's just a boy thing.
It's just a person thing.
Yeah.
That's just what how young
Marshall
humor...
has one data point.
It's true. My only experience is as a young boy. And as a young boy, I was definitely someone who could watch a movie once in the theaters, remember that entire movie, and then quote all the best jokes the next day in middle school.
It's amazing how young brains work.
Uh-huh. And I definitely think I did a lot of that with Adam Sandler movies. You know, there's a lot of that. And like this.
Wait,
was
so when you say Adam Sandler movies... Which movies?
Billy Madison, the movie we're starting with, we're going in chronological order, but Billy Madison is the movie that I saw like once and then forgot about it. Happy Gilmore and The Waterboy are much more like movies that I saw much more frequently. Now I look back and I try and remember any of the things from these movies, and it's hard for me to remember anything other than "You Can Do It" from The Waterboy.
Stop looking at me, Swan.
Oh.
Wait, so I think it's really important that actually we sort of sync up and define when did Adam Sandler films get bad, because to me it's really clear, and I'm in this conversation. I
honestly think I stopped watching before the unwatchable ones. I think I saw. I think the blood was in the water, and I was out.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, what do you think? When do you think it started to taper down?
Well, I think one could argue The Wedding Singer is a tapering. I actually think The Wedding Singer was actually a good film, and maybe a better film.
It was my
film.
Favorite one.
Maybe a better film, but it's like a departure in style. Where like, mm-hmm. Oh, is Adam Sandler? Is he not going to be a gross out comedian anymore?
Right.
Is he going to do something mm-hmm. different?
Because it's more cute than.
Well, it's
than
also,
gross.
But it has heart and it's sweet. I wouldn't say it's cute. I'd say it's
sweet.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. And it's not. Adam Sandler isn't the main vehicle of the film. It's like Drew Barrymore is a, in my memory. I mean, I
yeah, it's like a two-hander.
But she's, yeah, and she's an equal force. It's not just like the Adam Sandler show, and it's not about Adam Sandler being mm-hmm. Adam Sandler, although it is a little bit, but
yeah.
You know, not in the way that we think of like him doing like a stupid voice.
Okay, so 3, 2, 1, the movie that you think this is when you're like, okay, maybe this is not cool anymore. 3, 2, 1.
The
Big
Daddy.
Daddy?
Okay, so we both said Big Daddy.
Okay, I do
Match
agree with the Water Boy, though. I do agree with the Water Boy.
I was going to say, I'm glad you guys are married.
No, okay, it is true. I do agree with the Water Boy.
So what is it about, like, the Waterboy in your memory is caused the Adam Sandler tapering?
Okay, so I would say that for me, you know, Wedding Singer was like a departure. So it wasn't as strong as Happy Gilmore, but, you know, to a 12-year-old boy, I don't want a love story. I want a guy who can hit hockey pucks really far. And then so I was excited for the next one, and the Waterboy just, like, wasn't, it just didn't pick up where it left off. It just felt like, it just, everything about it felt cheaper. It felt less funny. It felt like it was more sticky and less jokes, which is, like, maybe an unfair way to critique Adam Sandler's, like, body of work, but it just didn't feel as funny. And so I was like, okay, I'll give it one more. And then I would say, then with you guys, Big Daddy was the first one. I was like, oh, this is yeah, bad. Like, the Waterboy, I remember thinking was funny, just wasn't as good. And I was like, this is definitely, like, not the one I want to own on VHS, but mm-hmm. like, I'll tape it if it's, like, yeah, on TNT.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like Waterboy came out in a period of time where the SNL actors were all playing very strange, imitatable characters in movies, because, like, this is also around the time the first Austin Powers movie came out, so I felt like there's a lot of people doing funny voices and saying their funny lines, and so maybe this was just a type of comedy that happened in the late 90s. But yeah, I think Big Daddy, where, you know, you have the stupid Adam Sandler comedies, and then you have, like, the sweet one with the Wedding Singer, and then Big Daddy is this, like, back to him trying to be gross, but there's, like, a kid there, so everything gross feels also really unsettling because there's, like, a kid there. And then we're supposed to also like Adam Sandler, but he's even more of an asshole in that movie than he typically is, so I found his character unlikable, and then his situation of being a sick-out comedian around a little kid just felt very uncomfortable to me.
Which, actually, side note, I guess we have to do Big Daddy now.
Probably. Because I still hate it?
Yeah, because I also wanted, like, that was a star maker. The kid.
Who's the kid? Really?
Yeah, Cole and Dylan Sprouse. Who was also the kid on Friends and is now...
What kid on Friends?
He's Ross's
Friends
son.
Have a spinoff with a bunch of children?
He's also Ross's son. And then they had a show on Nickelodeon. They're twins. Then they had a show on Nickelodeon. Ross always had a son. He had a son from season one.
Right, but
come
on. It was like an infant.
It was a baby with his ex-lesbian wife who wasn't really
fair. But now, Cole Sprouse is, like, one of the hottest, like, 20-something actors now.
The kid from Big Daddy is 20-something?
Yes.
I guess that makes sense.
And he's, like, and he has an element of sick-out comedian to him.
He was on set with Adam Sandler.
Yeah. I know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now, well, I want to do Big Daddy just
for
that. Well,
maybe Adam Sandler did a thing where he's like, we found this kid. He's like, oh, this kid's in some dirty shit. He's really funny. But then he gets, like, Bob Saget-ed, where he just gets cast in, like, a wholesome movie, but he's not a wholesome actor.
Right. Yeah.
He's still the writing on the wall with this, like, 8-year-old kid.
Okay, well, let's talk about Billy Madison specifically. Yes. What do we remember about Billy Madison?
Yeah, what do you remember?
So I'm going to say I think I remember a lot. Basic premise is he's the son of some, like, bajillionaire CEO type guy who's meant to leave the family business and fortune to Adam Sandler, and Adam Sandler's just, like, a man child who just wants to, like, fuck off and, like, get high and, like, hang out during the day and, like, just be a kind of a goofball. And his dad decides not to leave the business with him because he's just too much of a moron. And so Josh Lyman and his assistant is, like, the number two dude at the business, and he wants to kind of go in for a coup and take the business from Adam Sandler. So somehow it gets decided that Adam Sandler's too dumb for the business. It comes out that Adam Sandler didn't actually finish high school. His dad bribed the teachers to, like, give him good grades so he graduated through, you know, unsavory ways. And so now Adam Sandler has to go back and do every school every grade 1 through 12. And if he finishes, he gets the company.
And that's, like, such a, like, what a low standard to give your multi-million-dollar company to your son.
But even, even
it's of note.
It's even stranger. Like, I thought immediately of, like, Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. Trump.
That's a very. Just thinking, placing this in context is going to be really interesting.
Right. Yes. And think about, like, what if right now Donald Trump was thinking about actually retiring from leading Trump Industries and was like, I don't know if Donnie Jr. is smart enough because I did pay off all of his teachers. And then the idea that Donald Trump Jr. has to go back to first grade.
Maybe he's doing it right now.
Oh my God.
He's got to finish quick before he gets indicted.
Well, maybe he can get his GED while he's in prison. I hear they have prison GED plan.
Oh, yes. So
it's like Ivanka, if you can finish all the grades, you get the presidency.
Yes, and 25 patents from China.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, won't you join us as we go forth on this, the very first Adam Sandler film, as we watch 1995's Billy Madison.
Suntan lotion is good for me.
He was born into privilege.
Oh, really, fool? Really?
And stood to inherit a fortune. But for 27-year-old Billy Madison, there's just one problem.
How could I hand over my company to someone who couldn't even get through school?
That's nice.
Billy is not an idiot.
Give me one more chance. I'll prove I can take over. First grade through 12th grade, all over again. And then I get to take over Madison Hotels.
You're on.
I want you all to meet Billy.
Hello, Billy. You want some more of that? I didn't think so!
Don't you think it's a little pathetic that just because of who your father is, you get to come to school all over again?
Yes, I do.
I heard he's retarded or something.
Good morning, class. So let's all open up our reading is fun books to page 69.
Where's Billy?
He's in school, man.
So what's it like being back in school?
I don't know. I kind of feel like an idiot sometimes. Although I am an idiot, so it kind of works out.
Universal Pictures presents
Norman Invasion of England.
1066.
That is correct.
Adam Sandler.
I am the smartest man alive!
Spanish Armada.
1466. 67.
Billy Madison.
1469. 1514. 1981.
God, give me the answer!
And we're back from watching 1995's Billy Madison.
Oh my God.
Laura is bursting with energy. Yes, Laura?
Oh, I don't even have words yet. I have strong opinions. Possibly some of the strongest opinions I've ever had on this show, which is saying a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so excited I picked something that created the most strong opinions.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've been wanting to do this. We've been wanting to touch this on this for a long time, but I'm not going to lie. I had pretty high expectations for the level that I would enjoy this because I loved his movies when I was in middle school. And the level at which I am experiencing it differently is so overwhelming that, like, I just want to go back and just be like, no, little Laura Weiss, you are starting therapy in seventh grade and we are getting all of these movies out of your house and all of this type of representation needs to just be burned in a trash fire. Like, watching it from a female perspective was challenging.
So your initial reaction is you do not still love it.
Yeah, no, I hate this movie.
So, all right, that we got our first hot take from Laura Weiss. Eric, what is your hot take?
It's tough for me. I'm going to say it's really hard to divorce my nostalgia of this film and, like, memorization of most of the lines from, like, viewing it.
I loved how you said during the movie that you didn't know if things were funny or if you were Pavlovian trained to laugh at those specific one-liners.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
You said that, like, after the stop looking at me, swan.
If you say stop looking at me, swan, to me, I'm going to laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, so am I.
If you say no milk will ever be our milk, I'm going to laugh. Like, it's just, I don't even understand. Like, that's not funny. It just,
yeah.
I don't know. It just works on me.
Yeah. Well, I think it speaks a lot to, you know, our thesis, which was, was this movie just funny because we saw it when we were like 10, 11, 12, and at that time, humor a lot of times comes from something striking you in the right way, you laugh about it, and then you just want to repeat it and laugh about it over and over again, and it gets ingrained in your head, like Pavlovian conditioning.
That sounds so obvious when you say it out loud, but I don't know why it took me, you know, it took you saying it out loud for, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's got to be that.
Yeah.
Because this was not a good film by any objective measures.
This movie, like, take my strongest opinions that have to do with how they treated women in this film out. This movie was just like an editing nightmare. There were entire, like, even just like throwaway scenes that had literally nothing to do with the plot or the characterization or anything. And they weren't even funny. They yeah. like the Sloppy Joe lady, like totally unnecessary and not funny.
Yeah.
Like so much of that.
Well, and I think, Eric, you had a good point while we were watching it, was that this movie obviously was someone came up with an idea. Like Adam Sandler was like, how can I just get me to go through school? And we can write a bunch of school sketches. But the joke in every scene is an adult man is having to take this class. And that's really the whole movie. The movie is just a string of relatively unrelated sketches that are all one or two jokes. Jokes in air quotes.
There's an arc. It's thin. occasionally characters.
Exist.
Well, you know, it's like you start off and he's just like a drunk. And then he has some motivation. He wants something. Okay, he wants to get the company. It's weird because he doesn't actually seem like he wants the company. It seems like the deal that he's offered in the beginning is you're not going to get the company. You're still going to be set for life. You can dick off and like, you know, float in the pool and playing out with the penguins.
Dude,
and
Eric is going to run the company.
It seems like what's the challenge?
There are no stakes in this movie.
This man who has never had any stakes other than Wednesdays or Nudie Magazine Day suddenly cares about this.
Nudie Magazine Day. Well, we have to talk about those magazines.
Yeah. Yeah.
So his magazines that he's excited about are
she-males,
old chicks, yeah. and drunk chicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's not interested in the She-Male magazine, which we all were just like, oh man, this is 1995
There was a whole thing on the bottom that was like, this sits down to pee.
Oh yeah, I sit down to pee, or do I? ? And I was like, oh my God. Why are you ordering magazines that you don't want?
Clearly. That's what we're focusing on.
Well, it's a weird like continuity. Like you can dislike
I totally agree.
But let's just look at the craft of the writing.
Yeah, the craft of the writing is also silly.
The craft is unredeemable.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I think we knew the politics weren't going
to
hold up.
In the beginning, we're introduced to Billy, who has like a drinking problem and no motivation, and him and all of his friends are completely unlikable. And they kind of remain that way the entire movie.
They're just like rude, mean. He's not nice.
No.
So it's like I guess you like him because he's funny, but it seems like he shouldn't get the company. He's late for the dinner because he's like playing with shampoo and conditioner. He is like cursing out
and then making a fucking
Bradley
scene.
Whitman in like voodoo language. Like,
and like the crazy thing is, like, if we want to talk about arc. If there is a thin plot arc, there is almost no character arc for him. And that's the crazy part. He starts out as a piece of shit.
Entitled butthole.
Yeah. And he ends
by... as a piece of shit entitled butthole.
Yeah. And in no time do you see any active change go on. There are a couple times where he has a moment where it's like, oh, he's not that big of a trash bastard.
I can think of two moments where we see change in Billy Madison. So one is,
but are they consistent? Is my question.
Well, absolutely not. But famous,
I think it's important that in an entire movie he has only two moments of change. So
one is when he helps out Ernie pee himself, and this is like, you know, kind of a classic scene for me. You know, if peeing your pants is cool, call me Miles Davis. It's a quotable.
It's a great quote.
And so so this is when, like, you know, the teacher starts to fall for him because he did something nice, and now you're showing he might be a doofus, but he's a good friend and he's loyal. Okay, so we get some piece of humanity there. And then later on, he's studying with Veronica, the teacher, and he happens to know some historical dates. Now, I don't know if I didn't mention this, but this is the first time he's demonstrating any knowledge in the whole film.
Right.
He gets something right. He knows, like, when the invasion of Northern England is or something.
Yeah. The Norman invasion.
Yeah, the Norman. And then
he shows that he did 20 minutes of reading.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I mean, he read some historical things and he remembers some numbers. And I mean, frankly, like, I don't remember knowing those dates. Like, that was
they're not
important. But he learned something at some point. In the final scene where they're doing the academic decathlon, he doesn't demonstrate any knowledge of anything that he's learned.
And that so deeply bothers me.
And he cheats.
Yes, he cheats in the science with a shoe.
Like, there's several things I have wrong with the overall. Like, the movie sets up the premise that he has to graduate the every single grade, 1 through 12, 2 weeks each. He doesn't do that. In fact, it gets abandoned after the ninth grade. He never goes to the 10th, 11th, or 12th grade. But it's
not his fault.
Right, but it doesn't matter. The whole point of the movie gets abandoned before it's even complete, and then abandoned in favor of a completely new thing, which is challenging his rival in the business to an academic decathlon, which, again, was written by people who've obviously never attended high school because they are not quizzed on any of the core things. There's no math. There's no English. No,
the first one's math. It's some sort of formula.
Oh, and he just writes...
Eric drinks his own pee.
Yeah, he just writes Eric drinks his own pee. He concedes the round.
Well, I love that, you know, it's like, it seems like it's maybe it's like an all or nothing, like, you know, winner take all. So if you lose by a little bit, it's the same as losing by a lot. So the things that Billy Madison's not good at, he's very much not good at.
Right. But one would think that being good at math is important if you're going to run a business empire.
Maybe one of the only things that's important. I mean, yeah. It's funny because it's like home ec. It's like the 100-yard dash.
Yeah. Like
they do some Hamlet.
Yeah, there's drama.
They try musical instruments.
You know, if kids watch this nowadays, they're going to be like, there were arts being taught in school?
Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, education dig. Well, yeah. It's funny because you'd think, like, in 1995, all students did was take electives in a math class.
Yeah.
You'd think
yeah.
That's what high school was.
Right. Yeah, if you were looking at Billy Madison as a historical document, you would have utterly no clue what the American education system was like. But yeah, it comes down to this decathlon against Bradley Whitford. And let's take a moment to talk about Bradley Whitford. So his character is the hero of the film, in my opinion.
And that is the craziest. Like, let's take a moment. This is maybe one of the most interesting moments I've ever had on this show, where the person that I was certain was the villain when I was 12 years old is, when I am a reasonable adult, so clearly one of only two actual adults in the room. I mean, he definitely goes off the deep end towards the end there, but...
But they, I think
he spends 80% of the film having a reason, like, seeing the only...
Yeah.
Being the only person who sees the events through clear eyes.
Right.
And I would be in his shoes. I would be the person who was like, you're throwing your entire company away to this nightmare when I'm standing here and I know how to do all of this.
And I've
know
been your right-hand man for a decade now. Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And right. I would probably make a couple unethical decisions in my attempt to be like, I am doing the right thing from a righteous, like, he's like righteously sure that he should be doing this. I agree with him.
Yeah, there's a point early on
before
where
he pulls the gun.
They do this weird thing to make him suddenly definitely the villain by making him like pull out a gun and threaten to shoot people.
But yeah, but what you're saying, it's like they wrote a character. They said, hey, just so you know, you're the villain. So make sure you have some villain quirks or some villainy things, because we need to know that you're the villain. Because if you just take what he's saying like at face value, it's the only reasonable interpretation of what's going on. Billy is like a drunk man child. Of course he shouldn't run the business. Of course the guy who's been running the business should inherit the business. And then like everyone's like, oh, Billy, you graduated the second grade. Congratulations. He's the only one who's cynical and skeptical Billy's, you know, graduating the second grade.
Right. We like in the movie, every time he graduates, which again only takes him 2 weeks to graduate a grade, he throws an elaborate party at his mansion. And after the third grade, we see a third grade graduation party start happening. This is the third time we've seen it. And I go, is he going to throw a party every time he graduates? Bradley Whitford appears on screen
two seconds later
and goes, is he going to throw a party every time he graduates a grade? And I'm like, I see you, Bradley Whitford, my avatar in this movie. And the weird part is there are several times where he not only says the reasonable thing, like there's a part early on when Billy Madison's dad is trying to decide whether or not he's going to give the company to Billy. And Bradley Whitford goes, let me tell you something. How many employees does Madison Hotels employ? And he goes, probably about 65,000. And he goes, that's 65,000 people's jobs you're putting on the line by giving it to your irresponsible son. And I'm like, yes!
That's an incredibly compelling point.
There are more people Donald at Trump. Stake.
It was this scene, yes. It was this scene that we realized that this is actually the early years where Fred Trump was deciding who he was going to pass his business down to.
I mean, it's so much.
It's such a Trump allegory. It's so clear.
It's not even an allegory. It's a biopic of the early years.
And it's so much that I started wondering, I wondered aloud, how many wealthy children or children of wealth are living this sort of shitty, do absolutely nothing lifestyle that Billy is seen doing all the time.
And that's when we brought up Fyre Festival.
To call it a shitty Fyre Festival, to call it a shitty, I mean, I'd like to place it without judgment. Because, like, let's say you're Billy Madison. Your father is a bajillionaire. You don't have to work. You get to have this, like, fabulous lifestyle. What are you supposed to do with that? Now, if you want to, like, go to college and learn and educate and better yourself, of course you can. But do you owe that to someone? Like what is the right thing to do? And you can't see me doing air quotes, but I am. But
sure. I thought this is something I wrote down is this is a story of why nepotism and inheritance are stupid concepts. Like the idea that we
100% have estate tax.
Yeah. Exactly. The reason we have a society where people like Billy Madison not only are allowed to exist, but they flourish. I like to believe that the fact that we live in a civilized society where we are privileged to not have to worry about necessarily where our food is going to come from, where our shelter is going to come from. Like, we have escaped the jungle. Human beings no longer have to live in the wild. But we do that because we are all depending on each other in little ways. And so I feel like the idea is you're supposed to give back somehow. Like, you're supposed to contribute to the society that is keeping you safe. And so the idea that I think the thing that's disgusting about Billy Madison's lifestyle is that he is living in a lap of luxury that he didn't earn, and he is not doing anything to benefit the world that gives him so much easy pleasure.
Marshall does not care for wealthy people. but I get it. I get it. Well, I guess the question is, should he get, I mean, does him working for the company better society? It makes him more money. Now he's working. He looks like a respectable person because he wears a tie and he goes to work every day. But he's just earning more money and bringing more wealth into the Madison group.
And most likely bringing more wealth into the Madison group and like tens of thousands of people lose their jobs.
Well, he fucks up, of course.
He's gonna run it into the ground.
So maybe the ethical thing for him to be is to abstain from the business and keep drinking and chasing the penguin.
I mean, and I think if anything, this is also a criticism of how stupid capitalism is.
Well, is it a criticism of economics or is it a criticism of labor rights? Because, you know, we have to protect those jobs.
I love that we are debating if Billy Madison is a criticism of anything at all.
Oh, I think it's a criticism of almost everything. I mean, frankly, we didn't talk about this, but I couldn't watch this film without thinking about education rights.
Uh-huh.
We have a major epidemic of the privatization of the public educational system in this country. And you watch this film, and you're like, well, here's the arguably the richest 28-year-old in the world in this film. And he goes back to school, and he goes to a public school, which is so charming because he's having this, like, everyman type of, like, experience.
He even takes the school bus.
Well, the first day his dad drives him in, like, the... And I don't know what it is.
Yeah, which his father would not drive him. Their driver would drive him, thank you.
Yeah.
It's funny, because he takes the school bus, and then when he goes to high school, he drives like a Thunderbird or something.
Yeah, like a Trans Am.
Yeah.
A very 19... I do
like
enjoy
a super 70s.
Well, he shows up dressed basically like Matthew McConaughey from...
He shows up dressed the way he was dressed in high school, driving the car he drove in high school, wearing an REO Speedwagon t-shirt. And I do have to say, that moment that he rolls up, that all the high schoolers look at him, they see him for what he is, and they just laugh in his face, is very satisfying.
It's very pre 21 Jump Street. Yeah. 21 Jump Street. Like, the idea of, like, the roles reverse.
Yeah.
It's too bad they didn't take it further, though. The idea of, like, he was cool when he... You know, because this is an interesting
concept.
There
was an opportunity there.
Yeah.
Billy Madison was, like, a cool bully type, you know, cool kid in high school when the first time around, and now he comes back, and now he's an outsider, and he's being picked on and bullied and, you know, feels weird. And there could have been something... There was something meaty there that they could have done something with. They give it about 2 minutes and they move on.
And I agree
they
with
do
you.
One, the one joke where he calls, he realizes because he gets picked on for being an outsider.
And Veronica, who we do need to talk about in grave detail, Veronica has this one moment where she pulls him to the side and she says, hey, all of those high schoolers have been treating you like shit, but maybe now you realize that you were probably a bully in high school.
And
which she just knows he was a bully in high school, and she's choosing this.
We'll get into her in a moment.
Because she was written by Adam Sandler.
Right. We'll get into her in just in one moment. But the payoff for that scene then becomes the most well-acted exchange in the entire movie, where Adam Sandler calls up Steve Buscemi and apologizes earnestly for treating him like shit in high school. And Steve Buscemi's just like, great, thanks, man, I appreciate it. And then promptly crosses his name off of a list of people to kill. And like, that was legitimately funny. Like,
yeah,
it was really funny. It was a great cameo by Steve Buscemi. He plays it really super straight. It's really charming.
Yeah.
But then they wash over it. By then, he follows it up by putting lipstick on.
And then staring wistfully off into space.
And so the joke becomes, oh, this guy is like a crazy psychopath. He's playing it cool, but he actually has a kill list. He's a total psychopath, and he's trans.
Yeah.
Like, trans. Or a cross-dresser. Or there's some sort of, like, questionable sexuality, queerness in him.
Which also lines up to...
I mean, that's Adam Sandler. He loves to put a little gay panic in. I mean, because there's the whole thing with the principal, who
there's
is, like, gay.
There's a lot of
gay,
homophobic
and there's a lot of homophobia,
Chris
a lot
Farley
of gay
taking
panic.
His shirt off.
Yeah, yeah.
Though I will say, of all of the relationships that occurred in this film, there's only one that I support, and it is Chris Farley and the Penguin. 100%.
The Penguin
gives him
a
flipper job.
Yeah. Into it.
Okay, so we have to get into Veronica Vaughn. So on the first day of school, he runs into Veronica, who's very cute, and begins to flirt with her, and she already knows why he's there, and she sort of immediately hates him. And I side with her.
She's the only teacher who seems to be looking at this with any sort of sense of reality.
Yeah.
Her and Eric, or you know, Bradley Whitford, are the only characters who see Billy Madison for who he is, which is a moron. And everyone else just sort of loves
super
him.
Privileged moron,
a super
getting away with murder.
Yeah, like a white, rich, privileged rich kid.
Yeah, yeah. And eventually he has her as the third grade teacher. She hates him because he's disruptive in class. And then they go on a field trip during which he is dared to grope her.
Okay. Now, here's where we need to stop.
Yeah,
and
Laura,
we need to actually step by step say the script of what this film said.
Hey, Billy, I dare you to go touch her boob.
That is assault. Do you double dog dare me?
Yeah.
And then he goes and he falls on her and he grabs her boob. So we have set up a situation where a grown man is talking to children and says to them, hey, this thing is assault, so watch me do it anyway. And then
it's
we
the power
just...
power of a double dare.
Yeah.
I apologize.
And then they make it so that this absolute... like shell of a character that they created for Veronica is like ingratiated and smiling at the assault he does to her in the middle of a third grade class.
She like is charmed by him trying to fall on her to grab her breast.
And well, that is knows. When flames flew up my face.
Well, she knows that he was going, because he like followed, he makes it look like an accident. And she said, hey, Billy, why don't you go sit down? And you think, okay, it's fine. Like, she doesn't know what's happening. And then she says, I double dare you. Revealing that she knew the whole time. And she's like smiling and charmed by him at the same time. It's weird. The weirdest thing about the scene is actually not this scene, but the very next scene. We
yes.
cut, and now it's sort of like, you know, time has passed and all the students are walking by and Billy and Veronica are lingering behind having a moment together. And they've bonded somehow.
So
we're not sure how, but
whenever
now,
whenever
through
they
the
bonded
power,
it was cut out.
Through the
sexual
power,
assault.
Well, I think
yeah.
once you touch a woman's breasts, she will like you.
Yeah, yeah.
It just needs
That's
to take
the moral
some time
of
to
this
in.
Movie.
So 20 minutes later, they're talking, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I touched your boobs. And she's like, well, you're not the only one who's tried to touch my chest. No big deal.
Yes.
She completely writes
off.
She understands
Thank
exactly
you
what happened.
So much for putting that on, because I blocked that out the second it happened, because it drove me so crazy.
It's mm-hmm. funny, because the scene writes a character who's aware of what's happening, and at the same time is so able to dismiss it.
Yeah, yeah. They create an actually strong female character, and then they gut her. They absolutely rip out any substance she had, and they turn her into a shell of interest for him, and yet one of the endless women that is into him in this movie. There is a scene where it's Valentine's Day, and every single person in the room wrote Billy a Valentine that they want him to be his from a, and it's a bunch of third grade girls yeah. and the principal,
right?
Who
and they're yeah. all making like fawn eyes at him, and like that can be kind of cute until you realize like. Wait, but Adam Sandler wrote this movie to have a bunch of eight-year-olds.
Well, it's not just, I mean, like, can we list all the women who are interested in Adam Sandler? Because I think just about, I mean, this film definitely does not pass the Bechdel test. But there are a lot of female characters in this film, right, which is of note. And also, I don't think there's a single one who doesn't make a move on Adam Sandler
there's
at some point.
There's one, and it is the ninth grader that he humiliates by saying, you tried to make out with me in front of the entire class. And you know what really broke my heart in that scene? The ninth grade girl's face goes to this face that women all know, which is just, I am so fucking tired of this. Like, this was not this ninth grader's first experience. She is not humiliated necessarily. She is just fucking tired. And I'm like, this 14-year-old feels that way. Like,
she does look like world weary in that moment. Yeah. Like, fuck, another
just,
day.
Yes, exactly. And it's just this, oh God, it's heartbreaking. I think she's the only one.
But yeah, but like, there are mothers of students. There are students. There's Juanita the maid. There is a Miss Vaughn, obviously, and
there's the principal.
Yeah, and the
it's
principal.
A bunch of third
and
graders.
The bus driver.
Yeah. So pretty much everybody is into Adam Sandler, and the strangest thing is,
for
you,
no
Miss
redeeming
Vaughn,
reason,
Miss Vaughn understandably despises Billy Madison and the whole process that is going through until he gropes her. And then from that moment on, she smiles at him every time she sees him. And you know,
and they very
scene.
Quickly become a couple.
And they very quickly become a couple without, we never see them.
Well, it's a weird editorial choice, because the very scene after he apologizes and she says, oh, it's no big deal, is when Billy Madison has his first redeemable moment, which is he helps out his friend Ernie, who pees himself, and then he splashes water on his crotch, and now he makes peeing yourself cool to save his friend. It would be really easy to let her fall in love with him after that moment, because it's like, okay, well, he did something good at least. But the idea that, like,
yeah,
it wouldn't feel realistic, but it would sort of make sense within the context of the
it would feel a lot more realistic than as it currently stands.
Yeah,
you know, you would sort of swallow it.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Just, yeah,
and I did not swallow this at all. At all. I was just seething in the corner from the second that happened.
You really did not enjoy this film.
No, I didn't. And like, I keep saying it. I am stunned at the level that I did not enjoy this film. That I just want to say that scene ends with the bus driver looking up her skirt and then telling Billy Madison that he had slept with her.
And then he's like, no, you didn't. And then he goes, yeah, well, this other guy I know did. And he's like, no, he didn't. And then he goes, well, I bet it would have been great if he did. Am I right? And I'm like, what in the fuck is going on? Like,
yeah. What kind of grown men talk like this?
And I think, well,
it seemed
locker room talk.
I mean, pull me back if I'm wrong, but I actually think this is a scene where like Chris Farley's trying to have this like locker room bro out experience with Adam Sandler, even though they, in theory, the characters don't know each other. And Adam Sandler's calling him on it. It's almost like a redeemable moment, sort of. But then he like looks up her skirt, and then it's just like it's like they had like the framework of something that could have been a something.
Yeah.
It slipped through their fingers.
It did seem like there were several moments where like, oh, they're about to make a point about. No, they didn't.
Yeah, I do feel that. I do feel that. Like, when the whole like bullying moment happened, and there was that redeemable moment, I actually was like, oh, maybe we are going to reach a point where somehow, 70 minutes into this film, they're able to arc it so that I don't fully hate him in the end. And no, they did not make it. It was just a like 2-second blip, and then it just went straight downhill again.
Right. In the end, we get to like the academic decathlon, and it all comes down for some reason to some like
Jeopardy style
game show. Somehow Billy Madison is up 1 point, although I was keeping track. He wasn't up a point. They were even going into the Jeopardy round. Yeah. But also, they were even.
It's a montage. Lots of things happen that you didn't see.
Oh, and at one point in the montage, we see him cheat in this confusing science scene when it's been explicitly outlined no cheating. And also, the whole reason he's in this mess is because his dad cheated for him. So, no matter what, like, at that moment, I'm like, oh, well, this is all for nothing.
You're up one, but he actually should be down one.
Yeah, because you cheated. And
it was really glossed over.
And then their final thing is he has to give a report on the Industrial Revolution. He proceeds to give a bullshit book report, and I was glad that the test administrator like called him on it.
Mr. Madison, what you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Okay, a simple wrong would have done just fine, but...
The thesis of the film.
Thesis of the film.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple lines in this film where they really just, like, sum up the full exposition in, like, one or two lines. You know, at some point, Veronica comes in and Adam Sandler's explaining, oh, I need to do this to get the company. And she says, what do you mean? He's like, well, if I don't finish high school by June 15th, then I lose the company and Eric gets the company. Eric's a douchebag. And it's like, oh. That's the plot right there.
Boom. Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like, someone outlines the plot at least three different times, and I'm like, did they just put it in here so they knew they definitely had it for the trailer?
Well, like if you came in late from getting popcorn or something, you get caught up.
Wait, hold up. Question.
Yes.
Yes.
We all just watched this.
Correct.
That scene where Veronica hears what exactly is happening, the context at which she's going through school, is that directly before she makes out with him?
No. Oh, maybe.
Is it in the tent?
It's right after they're about to make out. So they're about to kiss, and then Carl comes in and interrupts them.
Where she's coming on to him hardcore, and there doesn't seem to be any
reason. Did she come on to him hardcore because she realizes that he's about to inherit the company?
I was thinking about this.
Because after that, she becomes aggressive in him finishing. She shows up at his house when it all falls apart, and she throws him in the pool, and she decks him multiple times, and she lies to his face and says, most people are a waste of space, but you have everything in you. Which is, she knows, we all know for a fact that's not true. Is the secret implication that she is just like, I'm going to get this.
I'm almost certain you're right.
Because that is the literal only reason I will accept anything that Veronica did.
And I think that tells you a lot
about... And I still won't accept it, but it's the closest I can get.
I think it tells you a lot about...
You're pushing with an open mind.
Yeah, I think it tells you a lot about Adam's... Like, Adam Sandler wrote this, and he wrote this character who falls in love with his character... After all the shit he put her through, she falls in love with him and then is his manic pixie dream girl that keeps picking him back up and telling him to go. And yeah, I mean, I feel like it has to be. She's a public school teacher and he is an inheritor. He's a billionaire inheritor.
Strike.
Yeah, like she is.
Well, yeah, no.
She needs to get organized.
And she even walks up. She even walks up and she's like, hey, is this your house just with your dad? Is it just the two of you that live here? I love this idea. I love this idea.
You
not
wrote her
because
as a secret gold digger.
I don't
that's
love
like a
secret.
Mother figure.
I don't love secret gold diggers. Like that's not why I love this. I love this because this is the only time that I'm able to discern any motive from her that makes me think that there's a world in which she could actually have a brain that wasn't like sucked out of her body halfway through the movie.
Right. Because, I mean, she's looking at Billy and she's like, this guy's way too dumb to get a prenup. Like, I can endure his bullshit for 2 years and then I will be set for life.
Well, it's interesting. Well, and she doesn't need to know that he's, like, in line for the company or not. Because just showing up at the house, you see the wealth. Whether he's getting the company or not, he clearly comes for money. He's connected. Like,
when she knew who he was on the first day of school, she's
I know
who you are, Billy.
So then how come she was bitchy at first and didn't switch it around?
Well, maybe it's because she, I mean, you know, it's maybe that's her character arc. In the beginning,
her character arc is she realized the value of money.
We're having to dig real deep here.
She like, realized she's how initially, broke a teacher she is, and if she flips it around, there's an opportunity here.
Well, and especially once he started like flirting with her, it like I think maybe it was like initially she's just like, ugh, disgusted, fucking rich pieces of shit get to come here and disrupt my whole class, and then he's like flirting with her, and she's like, oh well. I guess I can exploit this situation.
And I really want to take a moment to say that these are all great ideas, but what truly happened is that Adam Sandler wrote an absolute drivel female character that played completely to every single one of his wet dreams, and it was just 90 minutes of male gaze upon this woman.
Pretty much.
But I have to tell myself for my own sanity that there was some reason why this woman did this, because I had to sit through watching her do it. Yeah, exactly.
So what do you think overall the differences that between who you were as a kid when you saw it and who you are now that has changed the way you see it now?
Well, I mean, a lot. I mean, I was 12. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wasn't, I mean, it's me and society. I wasn't aware of privilege. I wasn't aware of gender disparity. I wasn't aware of, you know, rape culture. And it's, you know, just kind of 90s tropes. So it's really in here in a really big way. I mean, I was also, I grew up in like a conservative part of San Diego. And I used to say gay is derogatory and I used to defend it for a while. Like, it wasn't a good look for me. So I think I watched this and when I was a kid and thought, like, even if I had never changed, I just grew up to become the adult version of that kid without becoming any woker. I wonder what I would think about it now, because I think it would be a lot easier to swallow a lot of it. Mm. Now it's tough. It's really tough to swallow that, like, no, that's assault, brother, but I'm going to do it anyways.
Yeah, because a third grader double dog dared
me. He double dared himself.
Yeah, he put it up to...
Do you double dare me? Which is, I mean, it's fun. I mean, the joke he's making is structurally funny.
Yeah.
It's just...
The subject matter itself is gross. Yeah. What about you, Laura? What's the big...
I think actually if there's one other film that I can tie this back to, and it's very funny to compare the two, I've only felt this way with one other movie on this show, and that is The Little Mermaid.
Mm.
Where I watched something, loved it when I was young, and in looking back, realized that it reinforced and taught me that this kind of stuff is okay. So it's hard to watch this kind of stuff as a woman who, you know, like, as all of us, has experiences with this kind of bullshit. Not just to see, like, the sexual assault thing, but to not just hear the words, but to see the representation of this woman being created in a way to serve him, even though she is an infinitely more intelligent character. She's so much more deserving of anything better than Billy Madison, yet she decides, because she was written by she was not written by anyone that actually has ever been inside of a female's head, like, she is a fantasy. And this type of trope, this is one of the more egregious ones I've seen, but this type of trope is just fed over and over and over again in different ways. Like, I bring up The Little Mermaid because of the whole concept of she literally gives her voice away to get a man. And there's a whole song about it. And that is the theme of the movie. And so it's just all these really...
It's not about how it's better under the sea.
Right? No.
But everything was better.
It's better down where it's wetter.
But it's all of this insidious information that you're served as a young woman, but you don't know. You don't know you're getting it. You're just getting it. And so it's hard to see the really bad representations of this later on, because you can almost feel how it seeped in, that, like, shit happened in my life that emulates that type of behavior. And that kind of shit happened because this was the type of representation that we were given as children.
There's that whole idea, you know, about that, like, even bad or stupid or unredeemable men, that there's a little nugget in there that if just the right woman loves them hard enough and supports them and tells them, like, there's a point in the movie when she's come to, like, get him up out of his stupor and, like, go and finish the challenge, where she, like you said, she stares him in the face and says,
I believe you, Billy, and I believe in you. You know, some people have no willpower, no brains, no vision. They just drift through life like lumps of crap.
What is she talking about?
And you have all those things. You're just afraid to use them.
And all three of us were like,
yes,
no, he is that.
Is.
But that, it's not like he's, like, subtly like that. The joke, the whole point of the film is that he's worthless. That's the joke. The joke is that he sits around, he, like, gets so drunk that he hallucinates penguins.
Yeah, she gives him a pep talk that you would have given if this movie was completely rewritten, and instead Bradley Whitford's character is the older brother of Billy Madison, who has been given everything because he's the heir apparent, and Billy was ignored his whole life, and now he's trying to figure out a way to, like, prove, Dad, I'm worth a damn.
Oh, that would be interesting.
It's a way better movie.
Well, it's an interesting, it's a more interesting premise with more stakes. Yeah. Like, what if, because it's, I mean, we said this earlier, but, like, what's the point of, like, what are the stakes of the film? You know, he's gonna get the company, he doesn't for a second, he does this thing, so he will, and then he will get it. But then at the end of the film, he gives it away. He doesn't even want it.
Right, and as
the whole film was for nothing.
He's super loaded and will not cease being loaded because Mr. Madison has his own wealth separate from the company, from being the owner of that company that he is, no question.
When you say Mr. Madison, you mean the dad?
Or the dad, yeah. The Billy Madison's dad.
I love the idea that we're talking about Billy Madison with Mr. Madison.
He hasn't earned a mister. But yeah, I mean, like, we know that Billy Madison's dad is going to give him his personal fortune. It's, we're not talking about, I have to do this or my dad's going to cut me off. Like, that's, you know,
it's
like
the opposite.
Is I really opposite? Feel as though they should have set those stakes up.
Right. No matter what, Billy Madison will be a billionaire.
Is there something funny that they didn't?
Like, it's
is
absolutely. So, like,
this,
absolutely.
So this is, wait, tell me if I'm wrong. This is the first Adam Sandler. Like, this is the, like, Happy Madison wasn't a company yet, but this is effectively the first Happy Madison.
Yes.
Correct.
Film, right. So this is his first film where he gets to write it and star in it and, like, do the whole thing. And this is what he goes out with. Like, this is his, you know, this is, like, presumably what he's been sitting on for 10 years to make.
This was his magnum opus.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this kind of brings us to the sort of question that we're trying to answer here is, do you think Adam Sandler, like, is this movie funny still?
This is a tricky, how do you phrase this question? Like, did Adam Sandler have it?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Is that the question?
Was this movie deserving of the amount of love we heaped upon it at the time? I think part of the problem I had with this is I kept expecting, you know, you mentioned like there are some Pavlovian laughs in here where there's just a line and it's a line we repeated to each other tons of times at the lunchroom. But, you know, I was watching and I kept waiting for something like genuinely funny to happen. And I think I only really laughed at like Steve Buscemi crossing his name off of the list. That was funny. And I get the impression, at least after this first movie, that I don't know if this movie was funny.
So do you have other guests lined up to watch other
stories? Yeah, we're gonna watch all three of the first Adam Sandler movies. Because like in my mind, Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, and The Waterboy are kind of like the three.
Not The Wedding Singer?
Well, did The Wedding Singer come out before The Waterboy?
I attribute The Wedding Singer as its own thing.
Well, and I think we should do The Wedding Singer.
We will do The Wedding Singer because it was one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. I guess I hadn't remembered that they came.
It's funny that you want to watch Waterboy again. That's all I have to say.
I mean,
it's clearly a Mr. Deeds quality level film for me.
I mean, I'm not gonna have to rewatch Big Daddy. Or Little Nicky. Like
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Or like The Zohar, or like Chuck and Larry.
I didn't watch any of these.
I didn't either. But like, I sort of feel like if you're gonna, like, after this film, I feel like, do you have more questions about Adam Sandler? Because I feel like I don't.
Well, I actually do because I liked Billy Madison, but I loved Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
And I am very, very curious to find out if they are equally bad.
Well, you know, I feel like Happy Gilmore was a more popular or famous film. Or I don't know exactly what the metric would be, but I feel like it was more. I personally always thought Billy Madison was the better one. Happy Gilmore was like the one I would always be down to watch, but I was excited to watch Billy Madison. So I sort of felt like this is like we started with the apex. There's nowhere to go from here, but maybe not.
Yeah. Well, I think also given the fact that Do I Still Love It is a scientific organization, I feel like one movie is a small sample size to determine whether or not Adam Sandler ever had it, as you put it.
Well, if I can sort of make a pitch for the experiment, you have to watch his old stuff. It doesn't hold up, perhaps. But then you come back and you watch his. I think you should watch his newest film because you need some sort of like, I mean, we're going to be scientific about it. You watch his old stuff and you watch his new stuff because obviously the new stuff is not funny. I think that's what I'm saying. But is it?
Pause for laughter. Because obviously.
I mean, clearly. But is it any different from the old stuff? Has he evolved in any way? Has he gotten worse? Has he gotten better? Mm-hmm. Or is it literally the same jokes?
It's just, like, should we watch the Ridiculous Six or whatever?
Now that we're in our 30s, can we metabolize these jokes for the first time?
Mm. You know what? I will accept your challenge, Eric Whitties.
Thanks.
Well, I think that brings us to our title question, Do I Still Love It? Which we've already pretty much answered. But The question is, does anyone still like it?
It's okay if you do.
I mean, I was the one who was laughing when we watched it. I'm not proud. I think I do. It's what I said. It's for me, it's too hard to divorce the Pavlovian response. There's too many. I mean, for a film that's politics or just really atrocious, it has so many lines that are burned into my head. It's like more the entire like first eight seasons of The Simpsons or this film might be like head to head. It's just, it's so dense with cultural nostalgia for me. It's hard to say I don't like it. There is a lot to dislike about this film, and I would not defend it. No. But I did enjoy watching it.
Well, you know, and that is nostalgia, which the Do I Still Love It podcast is all about. So,
yeah, I guess I'm a statistic.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we don't always have to agree. In fact, we rarely do. So,
yeah. No, it's
Laura,
a long
time. How did you feel about this film?
It's a long time. It's a long time.
You've been strangely quiet, yeah. Laura. Do you,
it's a long time since I have been so disappointed in a film on this show.
Put that on the poster.
I was really excited to watch Billy Madison because I have such good memories of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this goes in the Hall of Fame for me.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I'm Marshall.
Oh,
yeah, Marshall.
Marshall, do you still
we aren't quite sure where you stand.
Yeah.
I'm
you're poker facing over here.
I'm like appalled. I kind of do hope that Happy Gilmore is funny so that I can be confused over how I feel about these first
and
two
not
movies.
Just judge ourselves from when we were younger.
And not just really tear into myself.
Yeah.
But hey, you know what? If you are listening at home and you watched it and you think we're full of crap, you know, you are entitled to your opinion. Let us know by tweeting at us.
But you have to watch it first.
Yeah, please do not be going on your 20-year-old memories of how funny it was when you and your friends used to get high and eat Funyuns and watch this movie. Like, you have to re-expose yourself to it. And it's streaming on Netflix, and everybody has Netflix, so check it out.
Everyone has a friend with Netflix.
Yeah, or a parent or somebody who has Netflix. Like, just get on Netflix. But yeah, let us know how you feel about Billy Madison, whether or not you think we will like Happy Gilmore, by reaching out at Do I Still Love It. We're at Do I Still Love It all over the internet. Or you can reach out to us at doistilloveit@gmail.com. Eric, do you have any projects or internet things you want to plug?
Well, if you are looking for a commercial director, please hire me. Or if you're looking for a stop motion director, that works as well. You can go to my website. It's witties.com.
How's that spelled?
It's spelled like my last name, W-I-T-I-E-S.
Great.
But mostly, the biggest thing that's going on right now is supporting teachers. I don't know if you're paying attention, but watching this film that's all about education just makes me think about how much support our teachers need. Los Angeles teachers just won a huge victory on Tuesday. That was really exciting. Major win for them. Oakland, where I live, is getting ready for a strike next month, and those teachers need a lot of support. The story is really complicated, but like the big picture is that they're striking for the rights of students. So let's support our future. They're going to pay for our Social Security when we're old.
Yeah.
I want those fuckers really smart.
Yeah, we need them smart.
Denver's getting ready to strike. Teachers, yeah. Virginia is looking at it. Teachers all over the country. Get involved. Support your teachers. Public education.
Yeah. Education is very important. So
Or else you get a bunch of Billy Madisons.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank our guest, Eric Witties. Thank you so much for coming on the show and starting us off great, I guess. starting us off on a movie. That's...
We really experienced it.
But I had a lot of fun watching it with you.
Yeah.
Despite, like, while I may not have had fun watching the movie, I had fun watching the movie with you.
Well, so. That is really sweet. And I had a lot of fun with you guys, too.
These are sometimes the most fun episodes to do.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah, no one wants a milquetoast nostalgia film.
All right, well, I really want to thank our guest, Eric Witties. For Do I Still Love It, I'm Marshall James.
And I'm Laura Weiss.
Saying, shampoo is better.
No conditioner is better.
Stop looking at me, Swan!
Okay. Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. You can follow us online at Do I Still Love It on Instagram, Twitter, and at Facebook. Also check out our website, doistillloveit.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review our show. It really helps us find new listeners. And please share the show with a friend of yours. Thank you so much for listening to Do I Still Love It? We're excited to bring you season 2 of our show, and we know it's been a while. 2018 was a big year for us as we launched our podcast production services company, Time Traveler Media. We've got lots of great shows we're proud of, and we're always interested in potential new projects to collaborate on. Visit our website at timetravelermedia.com. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/timetravelermedia and reach out at timetravelermedia@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.